Hello everyone. So this is supposed to bear some resemblance to plain Couette flow, as will the rest of the talk. And first, let me introduce my collaborators. Matt Chantry, who's presently at the University of Oxford, Dwight Barclay, University of Warwick. And this talk is, in every sense, that of Matt Chantry, but I'm giving it. So most likely questions will end up being addressed to him. That is, I will ping them over. You don't need a picture of me since I'm right here. By now we know that transition to turbulence does not take place. There's not just laminar and turbulence, as people might have thought or been taught a while ago. There's this long regime, which is the regime basically that the people at this conference are interested in, between laminar and turbulent, and which is variously called intermittency, transitional, and so on, and consists of some parts turbulence, some parts not turbulence, both in space and time and different things. We see things like puffs, slugs, bands, spots, what are some other names? No other names. And so our question today is to precisely delineate this transitional point between laminar flow and that intermediate flow. We want to know, of course, the value, but as was the case in the work done by the Hafavilla, Barclay, etc. group in 2011, it's not so much finding a number that interests us, but defining what that number means. How do you define a threshold? We know that Reynolds said long ago, this is not some threshold. Is this a transition continuous or discontinuous? Is it universal or not? Now, universal is a big word often used by physicists, but I will explain what is meant by that here. And this question was first asked in a 1986 article by Pumu in its present form. I mean, the question in its present form. So I think no talk here would be complete without showing a picture from channel flow. Everybody recognize this? This is in the minimal flow unit, the famous minimal flow unit of Kim, Walef, Jimenez, Moin, all those guys. So here it is. And now here is its size compared to a larger domain. And in this larger domain, it's well known that we see bands. These were discovered by Coles in the 60s, but then rediscovered in a larger, more repetitive way, more regular way by Prigent and Dauchaud in the early 2000s, studied by Dwight and me and a lot in the early 2000s. And you see here this alternation of turbulence and laminar flow. Let me see, is this just a straight laser pointer? Yeah. There, of turbulent and laminar flow. You see here these features that have continued to puzzle people, which is to say this is the streamwise direction here, and what you're seeing is the streamwise, spanwise plane. You're seeing a cut in the middle. You're seeing any quantity, really, turbulent kinetic energy, spanwise, turbulent kinetic energy, and you see that there is a regular wavelength and a regular angle. And this, of course, has puzzled people and continues to, and some of us have made a little tiny bit of progress, but really there's still no answer to this question of what determines the angle and wavelength. Yes? Oh.
Igor Mezichu, excuse me. Can I ask a question that is maybe for the afternoon discussion, but I'd like to see your point of view on this. You say, I see turbulent and laminar.
Yes.
And I don't know quite what that means.
Fine, no problem. I've been asked this before. This turbulent region does not have Kolmogorov scaling. This laminar region is not a linear plane Couette profile. Let us call them quasi-turbulent, quasi-laminar. Okay. A good one, isn't it? So this is the famous, these are the famous bands that were studied, as I said, especially in the early 2000s by Dwight and me and others. And now we wish to increase our domain further. Ah, so you see, you can't even see that minimal flow unit anymore, right? He's in the pixels there. Maybe not even a pixel's worth, not sure. Anyway, this is the domain that we will be studying. And you see what it is full of. It's full of little kind of quasi infant stunted, that's the word I'm looking for, stunted bands, you know, that they not full bands there. Okay, so you see that that's the domain we're studying, that's its size, and that's the nature of the flow in it. Oh, yes.
Ismail Hamiduddin, Johns Hopkins. So that's an actual simulation?
This is an actual simulation done by, that's right, the big one, done by Matt Chantre, that's right. In France, we're very blessed with supercomputer time. Okay, no, we're blessed with supercomputer time and we're blessed with cleverness. Okay, so here is a movie of that same thing, from an initial condition of the same domain, the black, it's been binarized, the black is turbulent, the white is laminar. Okay, so you're not seeing gradations of the kinetic energy. And 1 second of, okay, so it's a big size, but also 1 second of the movie that you're about to see here is 10 to the fourth advective units. So this is many, 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 many advective units. And you see the bands, the kind of stunted bands twinkling around. You see the percentage of turbulence decreasing somewhat. Okay, so this is it's the nature of this transition that we are, that is the focus of our study.
So really quickly, first Joe Kluwicki, UNH. If you use the smaller box size, then you get something that just looks like bands, but if you give it a more freedom with the bigger box size, then you get something that's more complex as this. Is that the way I should be interpreting this?
I refer this question to Matt. What would you say?
Matthew Chantre, University of Oxford. I'd say keep watching.
I could have said that. Okay, good answer. Okay, so you see this transition, you see the turbulence disappearing, you see how long it took, and you see how looking at a little piece could very well not give you, gives you a very small sample and not representative of the picture. Okay, so here, there. Okay, so such questions were studied in the 1980s via the tool of coupled map lattices. Especially by Châtelet and Manville in the 1980s. Here is a lattice in two dimensions. The white spots represent laminar flow, or what is called laminar flow. We'll call it, we could call it excited, not excited, you know, right, quasi. Anyway, the white and black. Black is supposed to be turbulent, white is supposed to be laminar. And these maps are stepped forward by, these lattices are stepped forward by an equation like this. This is a time-discrete reaction diffusion equation, where here's a diffusion term, and here's the reaction term. And the D measures the magnitude of the diffusion. And the F, the reaction term, is one of these. Those who remember the old chaos days or might still work in it, it's a tent map, which is certainly doesn't look like any hydrodynamic object, but it's gives chaotic behavior. That's right. The laminar state is up here. It's a stable fixed point, and all this is called turbulent in the binarization of the results. Okay, it was discovered a bit after their work that what you had to do was update these not all at once, as we would usually do in a PDE, you know, going through. But you got different results if you updated them in a random order. But that's not what this talk is about. But these are updated in the random order. So the big question is it transition discontinuous or continuous? These are results obtained from coupled map lattice simulations. This is called the turbulent fraction, how much of the state is turbulent, that black color, as a function of some control parameter, which in this case was D, that diffusion. And so you see here a perfectly discontinuous transition, and you see here a continuous transition, right? And you see not only that it's continuous, but you see another curve here, and this curve has, on a log-log plot, would have the slope minus 0.583. This is, remember we said universality, and this is what's predicted by the theory of directed percolation, and we'll be talking about that later. Okay, and so you see how well it fits down here in this region. So it's not only that it's continuous, it's also that it's continuous in this way. It could be, the way it looks, it could be any old square root dependence, but it's not. What's what? Discontinuous, continuous? No, surely not. Discontinuous. One has changed to do that. Yes.
One is coupled next, the other is turbulence?
Yeah. Okay, that's right. The location of this little guy. The particular parameters of this little piece here. That's what was changed.
Yeah. I've got a question. Mike Graham, Wisconsin. So if you go back to the tent map bit, so this is a tent map where you have a chaotic repeller.
Transient chaos.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So you get stuck in there for a while, but you get popped back out.
Okay.
Got it. Okay.
Okay. So people have studied fluid dynamics, wall-bounded shear flows, in this manner. Here are pictures from four articles. This is the pretty much the object that we're studying: two-dimensional plane couette flow. Article by Boutin, Châté, 98, Duguay, in 2010, and they found. They both found very similar results. That's reassuring for them. Critical Reynolds number the same, 323, 324, a discontinuous transition. This is experimental, this is numerical, so it's all seems consistent and settled. Here are some other pictures. This is 1D plane couette flow. How can you do 1D plane couette flow? It's a quasi 1D domain. You'll see it in just a moment. This is by the group of Lemoult et al. With Hoff, Avila, and others. They found not only that it was continuous, but also an exponent. Notice this exponent is not that one that was just mentioned before, this 0.58. It is a different exponent. So how universal can this exponent be? Well, this is for one dimension. This is the exponent that is predicted for one dimension. So they found that, and they found that it was continuous. This is 1D now, quasi 1D, very narrow domain. And there's been some work by Sano and Tamai in channel flow. There's some problem with the Reynolds numbers, most likely should be lower, but they state that in channel flow the transition is continuous. Now we come back to our result, our simulations, and these are the domains that were previously studied. This is the domain of Boutin and Châté. You saw that just now, and the domain of Duguay et al. Now, this domain was specifically chosen to correspond to the experiments of Prigent and Dauchaud that first studied in depth the banded patterns. So it was considered quite large. You see there's room for many bands. It was considered very large. That's how they discovered the regularity of the bands. And then the domains studied by Lemoult et al. Are here. This one is much longer than it seems, but it's had to be cut off. It goes out to here. But it's very long and narrow. That's the sense in which it's quasi 1D. This is a tilted domain, which is a device used to study bands in the past, especially by our group, Barclay Tuckerman. Right? Okay, so these are their domains compared to our domain. Okay, and that doesn't look, obviously our domain is much bigger, but in fact, when you go near criticality, you see what a severe problem it is to use a domain which is too small. You see no turbulence at all in here. You know, you obviously not only could you see none, but also you could see a completely the wrong proportion. Obviously, as you get close to having almost no turbulence, you need an almost infinite domain, and so that's what we think is we're almost. Almost at the critical value, and our domain is almost infinite in the same sense. I mean, the almost being in the same sense. Okay, so that's nice, and I said that we had these large computers, but I also said that we were clever. Let us turn to Waleff, what's now called Waleff flow. It's a model of plane Couette flow in that it really is a true hydrodynamic flow, except that it's got what are called Neumann boundary conditions for mathematicians and free slip for fluid dynamicists. It's got free slip boundaries here and here rather than the walls. Because the walls are not rigid, what is moving the flow, what is shearing it? It is forced by a body force, a sinusoidal. This is in fact the flow that was used to derive, by Waleff, to derive the self-sustaining process, not the plane Couette flow with its boundaries, but instead this free slip version of it. It embodies, it has the self-sustaining process. And our point of view is that this captures the interior of plane Couette flow. You notice there, plane Couette flow, of course, has boundary layers. This does not, because it doesn't have the boundaries and the sharp gradient at the boundary. And this has proved to be an extremely good reproduce extremely well the interior of plane Couette flow. These flows have been studied perhaps first by Tolmin, we're not sure, that's what Drazen and Reed mentions it, of course by Waleff, hence the name, by Schumacher, Eckert, Molis, Feist, Eckhart, and most recently by Bohm, Cini, Julian Knobloch. And I say this because we have the honor of having all four of these authors right here, a paper that's kind of rare. Other authors have studied things related. Mizuno Jimenez and Podvin Fregnaud have studied versions of plane Couette flow that didn't have walls, not quite Waleff flow, but some similar idea. Okay, so we have studied we've studied Waleff flow, and we find that Waleff flow, okay, of course, Waleff found the self-sustaining process in it, but what else? There have been very few studies of actual Waleff flow. His derivation of the self-sustaining process. We studied bands in Waleff flow and found that simulations of Waleff flow produced bands with the same angle, the same properties, the same wavelength and everything as you see here. This is regular plane Couette flow, this is Waleff flow. Again, this is the midplane of a streamwise, mid cross-channel plane in the streamwise, spanwise direction. Now, because the flow has no boundary layers, it is actually far more regular and smooth, and we can use a very short truncation for four Fourier modes in the cross-channel direction to study it, not to fully resolve it, but really capture almost everything. Well, I guess I'd say everything qualitatively, not quantitatively, and that captures the streak roll interplay. This model contains, as we said, the Waleff flow, the Waleff model. It's got everything you could want in the way of physics. And the result of doing this is that you turn it into seven partial differential equations in these Y Fourier modes in T, X, and Z. Instead of having 33 Y modes and the three fields, you've gone from 100 to 7, and you've done some reductions in other ways as well. And this makes this model very fast. And the validation of this model is described in a JFM Rapids Chantry, Tuckerman, Barclay. Okay, so we go back to our question. Is it the transition discontinuous or continuous? And here is the here's the punchline. Yes, I guess not the punchline. The spoiler. No, the headline. Takeaway message. Okay, here's the takeaway message. Our simulations of this these hydrodynamic equations show that the transition is continuous. It is continuous. These are the results of Matt's simulations. They not only are continuous, going down to very low values, but also have this universal exponent of 0.58, which is best shown on a log-log plot where you see the slope matching here. So this is a Reynolds number for truncated Waleff flow, which differs, as we said, quantitatively from the Reynolds number for plane Couette flow. Now, we pass then to more detailed understanding where these universal exponents come from. Directed percolation is something that was proposed to describe a liquid percolating through granular media. Here, it's supposed to describe the competition between two states, which could be called excited, non-excited, or in our case, laminar and turbulent, and two processes spreading and decaying. And here are pictures below, at, and above criticality. Where here you see the turbulence invading the system, here you see the turbulence disappearing, and here you see this perpetual interplay, we'll say. This transition has been studied a great deal numerically and theoretically. These exponents didn't get derived by themselves. But it has almost never been observed in physical systems. It had been observed in one physical system once, as far as we know. Okay, so what is it about directed percolation what about these exponents? Yeah, what about these exponents? There are three independent exponents. One of them we've already seen, the turbulent fraction. And on this picture, we can characterize that by the red line here. That is to say, what fraction along this red line is black instead of white, right? That's what we've been showing, graphs of that as a function of Reynolds number, or sometimes time. Another one is size of laminar gaps. What is a laminar gap? Well, you see this is a space-time picture like the other ones. A laminar gap would consist of the length between a black point and another, and a black point at the same location in space. This is a laminar gap. And it's predicted that if you have directed percolation near criticality, or at criticality, I guess it needs to be exact, these gaps that are different lengths will follow a probability distribution, which is a power law with a predicted exponent. Similarly, laminar gaps in space are the lengths between this between a black point and a black point in space, and these two have various lengths, and this is and their probability distribution is predicted by the theory. So you've already seen that we have the turbulent fraction. We have that one right. And now the laminar gaps in time. This is a log-log plot so that you can see it better. The orange is the data from the numerical simulations. The yellow is the best fit line in the log-log plot through this region here. And the slope of that line is minus 1.54, which I think everyone would say is a good match to the theoretical dashed black line with its slope of minus 1.55. So the laminar gaps are good. That makes 2 out of 3. And then the third one, the spanwise laminar gaps. Here, again, the data is in orange, and in the region, our domain is not infinite, our time is not infinite, so you get mess over there. But the best fit line has slope minus 1.17, slightly less impressive, but barely than the agreement with the theoretical result of minus 1.2. Okay, so it looks like 3 out of 3 exponents, but some clever people may have noticed the word spanwise here rather than spatial. And in fact, the streamwise laminar gaps are not so well behaved. This is the theoretical result that you saw before, a line with minus 1.2, and this doesn't seem to have much of a line through it at all, let alone with the right slope. So this is not an agreement. It's not a disagreement either, exactly, necessarily, but it's not an agreement. And so naturally, you study the things that don't agree until you bang them into agreement. And so we haven't quite done that, but we have studied it a great deal. These streamwise gaps, we already talked about the quasi 1D simulations and experiments of Lamoult et al. How were these done? They were done in long narrow domains, and there the correct exponent is the predicted exponent is minus 1.748, and for their streamwise gaps, they have this nice thing with the same slope, so they're okay. And in fact, we also did a quasi 1D simulation. This is our simulation domain, very long and narrow. And if you fit if you just take the gaps in the streamwise direction, you get a line with the correct slope. So there's nothing wrong with our counting of streamwise gaps or our treatment of the streamwise direction. It seems to behave fine in a quasi when streamwise is the only thing around, but in the 2D domain, it does not. Bruno.
Can I ask a question about this? Yeah. Bruno Eckhardt, University of Marburg. So for once in these critical phenomena, there's this thing called finite size scaling, like, I mean, how do these exponents change as you increase the size of the domains? Do you have anything to say on that?
Matt will have something to say about that later.
And directly on comparison between these two, in these quasi one-dimensional domains where you get these exponents, how long is that relative to the size of this two-dimensional one?
Well, I think Bruno or Mark will have something to say about that shortly, right? Am I right? I thought maybe I'm almost finished with the top. 5 minutes. Okay. Yes. Okay. So first Bruno, then Matt will answer the first question. Okay.
Bjorn.
Bruno. That's right. Bruno. Bjorn. Yes. Okay.
You want me to speak now?
Yes. Yes. In the end, and then Matt will.
Okay. So Bjorn Hof, ISD Austria. That was one of the first slides. So we were somewhat longer than the width of this 2D domain, if that answers your question.
How does the length compare? So this one dimensional has a certain length, and how does that compare to the length of the two-dimensional?
Yes, our length is larger than the width of the...
Twice as much. Oh, I could have answered that.
Maybe one and a half.
And now Matt will address the finite size scaling.
Yeah, if they overlap, if we plot the same thing, Matthew Chantry, University of Oxford, then we get the same curve, except for this. So what you're seeing in the bottom right-hand is the exponential tail, which is also something that you can fit if you're able to simulate enough different Reynolds numbers close to criticality. But yeah, this seems rigorous with increasing domain size.
Now, how could we get this different, I think the answer is becoming clear, different answer than the previous people? Well, after all, they were doing real plain Couette flow, and we are not. We are doing truncated Wellev flow. This is the Botton-Chatet results, Duguay et al. Results. This is our equations, our truncated Wellev equations in the Botton-Chatet domain, and the result is discontinuous. And similarly, in the larger Duguay et al. Domain, the result is discontinuous. This is our truncated Wellev model. Now, I have to say, I think Matt will agree with me, even our results, not being in an infinite domain, we are also discontinuous, but in a very, 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 very invisible little gap. You can't get continuous until you have an infinite domain. But that's what calculus is all about, right? That's what my son said. He said, calculus, he'll talk about what's calculus about? I said, it's about the infinitely large and the infinitely small, right? Well, not quite. He said, no. Or when he was much younger, he said, so you can't divide by zero, why not? And so I said, you'll learn that in calculus. He said, but tell me now. So in small domains, as you see, the transition is discontinuous. And our summary picture, just to play this, a movie of, this is a decay in time, this is at criticality, and this is, let me start the movie, this is at criticality and above criticality. You see the turbulent fraction decaying in time. Again, there's a universal slope that it's, this log log plus universal slope it's supposed to lie on. This one follows it for a tiny, tiny bit and then veers off, and that's where it is in this red domain. This is saturated, this is still decaying, and this is a similar picture from coupled map lattice. Here it's decaying as well, and this is why we use coupled map lattice, I guess. And this is one that's saturated and one that continues to decay with that universal law. And then there's just a tiny bit more. We have also done versions in our JFM of truncated Wellev, Poiseuille flow and pipe flow, the other prototypes. This is for Poiseuille flow. This is true simulation of channel flow. What is this? This is the mean flow in a turbulent laminar banded pattern. Don't worry too much about what it is. This is the cross-channel stripe wave vector plane, and you see the flow here. In our Walef version of channel flow, which is like the others except it's got a kind of cosine forcing here, you see that it looks just like the channel flow, except that you've cut off the boundary layers here, as if you'd taken scissors there. But the interior is captured very well. And here's the final point about that, which is to say what is here is plain Couette flow, the same thing. It is a cross-section of a mean flow in a turbulent laminar banded pattern. And you see here one Couette flow and then a flipped Couette flow. There are two Couette flows here. And you will clearly see the resemblance. But if you need any help, you will see that if you clip off the center, the center boundary layer, you see that this looks just like channel flow. That is to say, the main here, this is to demonstrate that Poiseuille flow is two Couette flows, and so we've, it's two Couette flows, and that we haven't had to study it separately. It's just one Couette and another Couette. Then we've also done, this is our last slide, a version of Walefian shear, that is to say, stress-free pipe flow. Here you see simulations from Ashley Willis's code here. I don't know if I mentioned the other ones were done by modifying channel flows to have free slip. Okay, so this is real real puff from a real wall-bounded pipe flow. People recognize these pictures. And this is simulations from stress-free pipe flow. So you see they do the same phenomena. It's just like cutting off the boundary layers. And that's it.
Thank you, Lorette. Questions? Okay, we'll start here and another microphone.
Joe Klawicki, UNH. Really interesting. I don't understand a lot. Why do you expect the percolation model to fit this physical system?
Question I've asked all the time. That I definitely have to defer to my distinguished colleagues. But perhaps, I think that might take them a while.
It's universal.
You know, physicist answer. Okay. No, I think it's possible that as the most naive person, I'm perhaps the most qualified to answer this, despite the fact that they are more expert. So, oh, I have the microphone. So I will. I will answer it. And I think there's an analogy to me that I came up with yesterday, the bifurcation theory. Over these many years, I've learned a lot about dynamical systems. People show me various results, hydrodynamic students who don't know it. And I say, oh, well, you found that. Well, there must be an unstable branch there. And they say, how can you know that? You didn't even see my equations. I say, I just know. You know, this is what's called a saddle node bifurcation. This is what's called a, you know. Or I'll say, this has, if you plot this on the right, it'll have a square root dependence. How do you know that? You didn't even see my equations. Well, it just, you know, that's how bifurcation theory is. So I suppose that for those, someday, perhaps I will understand this theory somewhat, and I will know why it's universal in the same way that bifurcation theory is universal. Perhaps my colleagues have less naive answers.
I can try in my talk if I have enough time.
I wonder if I could follow up from that, Lorette. Could you go to the beginning of your, Rich Kurzweil, Bristol. If you could go to the beginning of your talk, and you compared and contrasted two results of two tent maps. There, one was continuous and one was discontinuous.
Yes.
Now, you know, if I was trying to think universally, I would say there must be a smooth connection between those two tent map choices, such that that discontinuous branch comes down and becomes continuous. Is that true?
Yes. Yeah. By varying the parameter that brings, you know, we screwed around with the parameters of this map. By varying it, I would say yes.
So you could then ask, well, if these aren't two distinct states, discontinuous and continuous, how can you be sure when you look at a model of a system and you get one result that actually, if you resolved your model even further, you'd get a different result?
I think the answer is you can't, unless it's proved analytically in some way, just as you can never be sure that your if you're numerical or experimental, that your bifurcation isn't very, 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 very slightly subcritical.
Yeah, so for example, if I was to double the number of modes in my Walef model, would I get a discontinuous transition?
Oh, no, it goes the other way around. As you unresolve As you de-resolve, you become discontinuous. Not.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
You sure about that? I mean, that
well, I mean, I should say, yeah. That's the state of my current knowledge, yes. that's all I can say.
Okay, thank you.
So, Navid Costantinou from UCSD. That's a very nice talk. I'm always mesmerized when I see these percolation things. I just missed something. When you show these results with the exponents that you fit very well, were that for actual turbulent flows or Wallachian turbulent flows?
It's for a Wallachian turbulent flow. Am I right, Matt?
Yeah. You haven't done it for a...
The large simulations that large of actual resolved plane Couette flow are impossible.
Yeah, I would guess that. Okay, thanks.
Roman Grigori, Georgia Tech. I don't remember if you mentioned that on the slides. For the theory exponents, was that 2 plus 1, 2 spatial dimensions plus time, or
that's
was
correct.
It 1, 2 plus 1?
When I say 2D, I haven't yet been imbued in the percolation community, and to me, 2D means what it means to the rest of us, 2 spatial dimensions, 1D means 1 spatial dimension, and time is present.
So that's not immediately obvious, right? Because there's clear anisotropy in the flow, so it's...
Yes, okay, right. Indeed, that's right. So emphasis here, that's right. We are not aware of any investigations of non-isotropic directed percolation, and we are eager to be informed of any existing references to non-isotropic 2D. To me, 2D, 1D is one problem. 2D is an infinite number of problems. Just as linear is one thing, non-linear is a lot of things. And I'm eager to hear about non-isotropic 2D percolation from the experts we are not aware of in our cursory, we've gotten pretty far. We have not found references to this. And we are interested, what we believe, by the way, it's not yet verified, is that this will eventually go to the correct exponent, but at a very different rate, and we are engaging in extremely long coupled map lattice simulations on many, many processors to try and move this towards that, but who knows whether... my colleagues believe that it will get there someday, but at some different rate. I myself remain naive.
Mike Graham, Wisconsin. So, Laurette, this is a fantastic talk.
It's all Matt's.
Matt, this is a fantastic talk.
Thank you. Okay.
Can you go back to your tent map
model?
I think this is fascinating. So, and connects back with the one of the central themes here. So that map has a laminar state, which is your upper right one. It has a lower branch state, which is the one in the middle there where the red and the black intersect. And it has an upper branch state, which is the lower right corner.
Mm-hmm.
And so this has the same ingredients that channel flow has, that Couette flow has. And we've done simulations in Couette, or not in channel flow, much smaller domains and further from the transition. And what we see is that the low drag regions are spatiotemporally local approaches to a low drag, lower branch coherent state. So I'm wondering if you've looked at the spatial structure of what's going on in the various regions of your flow, especially as you move away from the transition. So here, I mean, your white regions are probably pretty close to that laminar state, but I think there's a lot more structure in there as you move away from the actual percolation transition.
Well, I'm not sure. Okay, I can answer this from my band days, these days here, and say that here what we found was, as I said, that this was not exactly plane Couette flow, but that as the bands became more, at lower Reynolds numbers, when the bands became more and more separate and isolated, then it did go to plane Couette flow.
I think it'd be really interesting to look at that transition as well, the kind of the other end of the transition toward homogeneous turbulence.
Burak Budanur, IST Austria. I don't know how it would be for the directed percolation models, but for coupled CAT maps anisotropy can be included by making diffusion constant anisotropic. So did you try this?
That all of our all of this is anisotropic. That's correct. We are using anisotropic, and I think you can see that very well here. I think you see the anisotropy. You'll see it surely in the movie. Look how there's the. You see how this diff. Right. Okay. These are anisotropic coupled map lattices with the diffusion coefficient in one direction four times the other. We've also done isotropic ones, where naturally there isn't a difference in gaps, in spanwise streamwise gaps.
Rodolfo Ostila, Harvard University. Why four?
Why four? Oh, you know, well, because, let's see, we scaled the domain sizes to be the square root of that, and so we have a domain that's twice as big. It's a random thing. However, I did suggest that maybe this is a way, if you get things to map, this is possibly a way to kind of extract from the shear flow the effective diffusion in the two directions, is how much it resembles resembles that at what rate, that you could go backwards and get some kind of what is the effect of anisotropy in a directed percolation kind of sense of shear flow.
Any other questions or comments? Yep.
Joe Kluwicki, UNH. Can you go back to the, you showed the different box sizes, and you made the argument that with the smaller box sizes, you don't get the right distribution of, I think it was later. Anyway, this will do. You know, you said one of them doesn't have the right number of turbulent regions, and the other ones, you know, you have to go to this really big size. But wouldn't we expect in the small boxes, since it's periodic, you'd get a random distribution in space and time that would reflect that? I mean, isn't that the whole idea behind using a periodic box?
But doesn't this picture kind of say it? That is to say, if this...
But don't these things happen randomly in space and time?
They do happen randomly in space and time, but what to say? You mean if you wait long enough in a small box?
That's what I'm saying.
I guess... well,
or is it,
I see.
It's box right, size matters, I guess.
My distinguished colleague here will answer the question.
Dwight Barclay, University of Oregon. You don't go spontaneously from laminar to turbulent. So once you're white in your small box, you're never gonna. It's stable. That's the nature of these. They're called absorbing state transition. There's a state laminar flow that if you're in that state, you'll never come out. It's only by having turbulence. So once the turbulence leaves the box, you're done. That's why you need a big
one. So to Daniel Lequene, Princeton, we were talking about these anisotropic directed percolation models. So, your map model, you were talking about changing the diffusion in the different directions.
Yes.
Have you thought about changing the forcing?
Well, it's true that I believe we have not done it. Every once in a while, Dwight seems to remember, we always use three. Our parameter, we never change this. That's right, he says. So I guess that could lead to an investigation of changing the height of this. Yes, indeed. We haven't done it.
Is there any argument for thinking that the real system where you're anisotropic, that maybe the anisotropy is well described by diffusion, or is it just that was the easiest thing to do?
That was the easiest thing to change.
Is it quick? Okay. Last question.
So the whole, like, Rob Poole, Liverpool, so the whole idea of the minimal channel units, like at higher Reynolds numbers, well beyond transition, or well beyond the critical point. So can you think of this as you go closer and closer to the critical point, that the minimal channel to sustain turbulence just gets bigger and bigger and bigger?
My distinguished colleague is shaking his head vehemently, yes.
Nodding. Okay.
So it's a yes, not a...
Okay, let's thank Lorette for a great talk.